I think the one skill that I hold myself accountable to, and I think is a constant learning for anybody, and one of the most important skill sets, I would say, the ability to think like a business operator holistically and yet be true to your specialization.
You're listening to Learning Leader Spotlight, interviews with corporate L&D leaders. On each episode, we sit down with key industry experts to discover more about what's happening in the world of learning and development, from current trends and insights to the most valuable lessons learned along the way. Join us for a fresh perspective on all things training and the best direction forward. Here's your host, Leanne Lankford.
Hi, welcome to Learning Leader Spotlight, the podcast where we interview learning leaders of today to help the learning leaders of tomorrow. My name is Leanne Lankford. I'm your host of the podcast. I'm also the president of Training Pros. Training Pros is a L&D contract staffing company. We like to say, Training Pros, when you have more projects than people, let us find you the right consultant to start your project with confidence. I am extremely pleased today to have as my guest, and please correct me if I'm wrong, Rama Iyer.
You got it, Rama Iyer. That's right. You got it.
Yeah, she is the Senior Director of Corporate Leadership Development at Spectrum. Welcome, Rama.
Hi, Leanne. I'm so glad to be here.
I am so happy to have you. So can you share with our audience a 60-second overview of your background and what you do?
Yeah, sure. So I started off as an economics graduate. I have a master's in economics. I thought that's what I was going to do for a living. But guess what? I did go ahead, do an MBA, and I focused on HR. And really, my career has spanned 6 industries, 3 continents, both HR business partnering experience for almost 20 years, and now 2 centers of excellence. So that's where I am now as a leadership development professional. And in my current role, my organization, along with the business unit L&D team, so we partner with them, what we try and do is focus on bringing direction, content, tools for leaders at Jotto to lead in the Jotto way. So we have a framework and we expect our leaders to be completely equipped to lead in that way. And we truly believe that great leadership has such strong and vast impact that it's actually a competitive advantage. So that's the work we do.
That was a really interesting answer. I'm curious, so I think my audience is, could you tell us how you made the path from economics over to HR and leadership development? What attracted you?
Yeah, so when I was doing my undergrad, I had started exploring career options in business following an MBA. And what really intrigued me about HR was, even though just like all the other specialties like finance, marketing, technology, there's a lot to learn, but in the essence of it, people are different. There are no set formulae to deal with people. So yes, you can gather a lot of knowledge, but doing well as an HR professional and being able to coach business leaders in their stead to do well just requires judgment. And there's no way to gain that judgment other than by jumping in, learning through experience, having the courage to fail fast, fail forward, and just doing it. So to me, that was the most attractive part of HR, is that it's just constant learning. And in my HR business partner experience, the one thing that came out very strongly to me as an insight was just the big and significant impact that leaders make, not only to business outcomes, but to people's lives. It's an outsized impact. So a great leader can not only ensure business success, but 2, 3, 4 levels down, by building the right culture, by coaching their teams the right way, leaders just impact people's lives and wellness. And that really is what made me move into leadership development as one of my stops in my career journey. I definitely wanted to get deeper into the space and really understand and contribute to it.
That's a great story. I'm glad that you were drawn to it because of the way you can contribute to not only the company, but to people's lives. That's one of the beautiful things about our field is that it's all a bunch of people who want to help.
Well said.
You've been in the field quite a while. What are the biggest changes you've seen in the last 5 years?
Can I expand that time frame to maybe the last 10 to 15 years? Because the changes have been so quick and so many, right? So the environment, which has impacted changes in HR, has also been morphing like nobody's business. So if you think of geopolitics or economics and just how information travels, technological change, and just the pace of change, or even COVID, which taught us to expect the unexpected, we're all dealing with a completely different level, pace of change and ambiguity. And HR has had to evolve in that. And to me, there were three key changes that I have personally experienced over my career that I've seen. The very first being how integral HR strategy is to business strategy. I was schooled way early in my career in a methodology where business strategy would come first, it would get decided, and then HR strategy would get aligned. It could be a fast follower, but it was a follower nevertheless. It would get aligned to business strategy. No longer. We don't have an opportunity for that lag. HR strategy has to be front and center, and it has to be a very important strand of business strategy. So there is no space for that lag anymore. If your people are your biggest and most productive asset, which I truly believe they are for any organization, then these two have to be completely enmeshed. So I've seen that happen in my career, and especially over the last 15 years. As a corollary to that, because now you're talking HR strategy, you're talking about ROI on HR initiatives, the way we use data, what data is collected, and how we define the impact or ROI of HR initiatives has changed. So don't get me wrong, traditional metrics like does an initiative impact retention, does it give us some cost savings, they are all important, and they've not gone anywhere. But we have had to expand our thinking of what kind of data we need. And technology has helped us do that. I'm going to articulate this with an example around employee listening. Even 15 years back, most of us thought of employee listening as a once in a year employee satisfaction survey. And look at where we are today. As a matter of fact, I remember Lena Nair, who used to be the Unilever HR leader at the time. She shared this. I was reading in an article how she talked about having a screen in her office where real time she was seeing employee sentiment change. And really, all of these kind of data that are at our fingertips now, the way we are able to analyze them, help us make decisions faster and help us articulate the impact and ROI of HR initiatives in a very different language than we used to be able to. That's the second big change. And the third one is really HR's role as a coach. So think about what our leaders who we coach are navigating. They're navigating a world full of uncertainties, employee activism, customer activism. And it just takes a different level, depth, and sheer volume of coaching than what it took, I would say, a decade or so ago. And HR leaders have definitely stepped up to the challenge. And I think this is going to continue evolving.
Those are some very insightful thoughts you had there about what's changed. So let's see what you think is going to be the future of HR and leadership development.
Okay, let's go there. Like I said, some of these trends, I think, just are going to continue to deepen. One area that I think, or one skill set that I think HR leaders will need to very quickly develop if they don't already have it, which I think most of us do, because the last few years have taught us to expect the unexpected, is scenario planning. So traditionally, we did workforce planning. We did all sorts of planning, but there was an expectation that we knew what was coming and we were planning for that environment or for that context. But COVID taught us one thing. Expect the impossible or the rarely possible and be ready for it. And the only way to be ready for something like that is to have the ability and the agility to scenario plan very quickly, have the ability and knowledge and the people around you who can help you forecast the impact of decisions. And that's a very key skill that I think all HR professionals will have to develop. Going back actually to what I started off, it's all about judgment. There are no set formula, right? So it just brings that back. The second big change, and you're going to have heard this ad nauseum, of course, is the impact of AI, but I have to mention it. I'm sure every speaker on your podcast has been talking about this, but here's my take on it. That yes, the impact of AI is going to be long lasting. It's going to be deep. The one perspective I'd like to share is, for most part, when we hear about points of view on how we are responding to the impact of AI, it seems to fall in two categories. Are you an early adopter or are you a follower? And follower has many nuances. Are you a fast follower, slow follower, risk taker, not a risk taker, doesn't matter. But you're either an early adopter or you're a follower. I think the reality is more nuanced than that. I do think HR leaders or leadership development professionals, because it's really truly impacting our space, can take one or the other of this binary choice. They have to get more nuanced and understand the impact of AI on the different aspects of their work. And they will then have to have the agility to say, I'm an early adopter here, but my team is going to be maybe a follower there. That takes not just the skill set or the agility to make fast decisions, but also it means that we have to take the time to understand and study the impact, make the time to observe and make sure we have our ear to the ground, because someone else may be trying it and how are we making sure we know what that looked like. Yeah, so that's the second one, I would say, the impact of AI. The third area, I think, which is going to really be important is, how are we helping teams come together and become really cohesive and effective? Of course, there's a lot of work that has been done on team's effectiveness. It's not a new area, but I think it's an underestimated area, especially for the future. The very first being, we talked about how our leaders are leading in a very ambiguous and fast-changing environment. Traditionally, it was enough if, let's take a leadership team, right? Every functional leader largely worked in their swim lanes and did a fair bit of coordination. And the COO or the CEO would bring it all together and provide direction. That's not enough anymore, because our environment has become so complex that we are in each other's swim lanes. And how do you understand enough about each other's functions so that you are collaborating effectively without losing focus on your own swim lane? That is a space where I think leaders are going to require a lot of help, and we should be really paying a lot of attention there. Because individuals or groups of individuals don't produce business outcomes. Cohesive teams do. And the same thing, I think, applies at an individual level. With remote working, with hybrid working, the way people connected with each other and the way teams formed, shaped, and became cohesive just needs a different level of thinking. Because we don't do that anymore. For most of us, we come into the office, we meet our colleagues, but for a large part of the day, just like I'm doing right now, we're looking into a screen. So how do we build cohesion and connectivity? We have to start thinking differently about this. So those were my three.
I find the discussion about creating the connection and creating the cohesiveness very interesting, because so I've been working virtually for decades or so. Our company's been virtual 27 years. And finding ways to become a cohesive team, we've had to be very creative, because over time, we're now spread all over the United States. We're not just in the original location. And to get together is very expensive. And how do you do that? How do you get some kind of connection with these people that you work with day in and day out when you're just looking at them on a screen? Or in most cases now, because we have screen fatigue, we're not putting our faces up on screen as much anymore.
You nailed it. You said it. You know, yeah, dispersed teams adds that one more layer of complexity, right? And by 4 o'clock, maybe for the last meeting, everyone's begging off the screen and now everyone's just on speaker.
I beg off the screen pretty often because I have to have a light on shining in my face and it exhausts my eyes.
This episode is brought to you by Training Pros, the award-winning contract staffing agency that works exclusively with learning and development professionals to match the right consultants to client projects. If you're in corporate L&D and have more projects than people, let the industry practitioners at Training Pros provide you with the right L&D consultant to start your project with confidence. Find out how we make finding quality consultants easy by scheduling a consultation at www.trainingpros.com.
I think it's a big thing for us to try to figure out as both in HR and in learning is how do we help make form that connection that needs to happen at work in order to create the team atmosphere that needs to happen. Let's shift gears a little bit. So can you tell us about your most influential professional mentor?
This was a really, really difficult question you lobbed my way. I don't think I can name one mentor. But here are my couple of insights about mentoring in general and mentors and who have played a big role in my life. While I'm a true believer, my team offers this tool and this opportunity to a lot of our employees. I'm a true believer in formal mentoring programs. I do think that it is, we almost owe it to ourselves and our development to organically always be looking for finding mentors and asking for help because they just play such an outsized role in shaping our careers, especially if you get those mentors like I did and I was fortunate to get, who have been brutally honest with me at every step of the way and who have never shied away from giving me great advice, even if that wasn't what I wanted to hear at that point. So that sort of transitions to my mentors. I've been very fortunate to have had multiple mentors, not just in my professional career, but even from my education and my personal life, who have helped me think differently. And the way they have done that is definitely by being very honest with me, giving me a lot of time, listening for what I was trying to do, but what was coming in the way, and pointing that out. As a matter of fact, I would not be here in this leadership development role if it wasn't for a mentor or two who suggested that there is a time in your career to grow from a level perspective, and then there is a time when you can actually just grow yourself personally and professionally by moving laterally, which is what I've done. I was on an HR business partner career path, and I took a step deliberately to move into org effectiveness, to move into leadership development, every time taking a risk, but they have paid off nothing else. They were hard to make, but today when I look back, I wouldn't be as rich as a human being if I had not made those changes. That's my 2 cents on mentors and mentoring, and I hope your listeners find it useful.
Oh, thank you. Mentoring and mentorship is very dear to my heart because I do feel it's one of the best ways to grow in your career and grow as a person. That's why I always want to ask that question. You're in a great position being in both HR and in leadership development. Can you share with our audience what is one skill you always look for when you're hiring for your team?
Yeah, an excellent question. So most skills, right? Most skills can be taught, they can be developed. You learn through experience, you learn by going to school. It's easy. I think the one skill that I hold myself accountable to, and I think is a constant learning for anybody, and one of the most important skill sets, I would say, the ability to think like a business operator holistically and yet be true to your specialization. So what do I mean by that? We all have our swim lane. We all have our goals, leadership development goals, HR goals, initiatives. However, at the end of the day, we are all here to drive positive business outcomes and do the right thing by our stakeholders. There are multiple stakeholders, right? We have our co-workers, peers, employees, customers, you know, the board, the operating committee, the leaders, and then, of course, you know, our shareholders. Yeah. So it's easy to lose sight of that and become really myopic and focus on your project. What did your team do? And sometimes losing sight of that big picture means we are driving outcomes that are suboptimal. So the skill set, if you want to call it that, or the ability to keep that big picture in mind, still hold your specialization front and center so that you're doing the best leadership development work or being the best HR professional that you can be, and having the humility and ability to walk away from work that you have done because it's not driving business outcomes anymore or the context has changed, I think is a really, really important skill set and mindset. And it takes a lot of work. But the good news is, as long as you're willing to listen, keep your knowledge up, know what's happening in the business, and are able to take that step back, and able to explain to, sometimes it's hard, but you have to explain to your team why you're walking away from something, but you can do that. I think it's the most invaluable skill for it will. Just being able to hold the big picture and yet being true to the work that you're doing.
That's a tall order, and I'm so happy to hear that you are able to find great people who can do that.
Unfortunate.
Shift gears again. Where do you get your industry news and information?
Probably figured out by now, I'm a very big context person. So everything for me sits within a context, and that context is important. So my choice of reading and news actually reflects that. I am very partial to newspapers and journals that do a lot of insightful, I would say, not just reporting, but they get into analysis. So I have patience to read that, but that's what I'm looking for. I'm not asking for an opinion or a journal or newspaper to tell me what I should think. I'm looking for that analysis so I can make up my own mind. So the two newspapers that I start my day with every single day are the Wall Street Journal and the New York Times. But here's my big shout out. No week is complete if I have not read The Economist. I aspire to, but never read it end to end. Having said that, if I have not gone through my favorite sections and at least finished 60 to 70% of The Economist, my week is incomplete. In addition to just the amazing analysis that The Economist offers, it has these special issues like the Technology Quarterly and so on, which are almost like tutorials. So I actually save them. I go back, and every time, and I've been in six industries now, every time I make an industry shift, I almost use The Economist as my teaching partner. There is just so much over there to learn about an industry and stay up to date in the context of everything that's happening, the geopolitics, the economics, the culture. Having said that, though, I do want to also give a shout out to I4CP, Institute for Corporate Productivity, which is my go-to for HR and leadership development, talent management, these topics. So we, as an organization, subscribe to I4CP, so I'm very, very fortunate that I get it for free. But I can tell you, I have really derived a lot of value from everything they have to offer, especially what they call next practices. So they're not just looking for best practices that are relevant to today, but they really help professionals think about what's coming next and how should we be changing our approach, so that we're already thinking about that next practice.
Those are some very good resources for our listeners. I love that you go back to your roots and read The Economist. It tells us that you still greatly value the education you got in your undergrad. And I have to tell you, economics was my favorite subject in my undergrad as well. Although I didn't major in it, I only took five classes. But it looks at everything.
Yeah, I agree. It's just so multifaceted, right? Okay. And then by the time you get to behavioral economics, you're getting into a completely different field almost. Mm-hmm. So yeah, I just, don't get me started. I will not stop talking about economics because I can go on and on.
All right, last question. What is one book that you would recommend for anyone wanting to move into HR or leadership development read?
I actually have it right here in my office. So I thought I'd just pull up the copy. It's called The Leadership Pipeline.
I have it right up there on my shelf.
Oh, look at that, by Sharon Trotter and Noel. And look, I've had a couple of people tell me it was written for a different time when careers were linear and well charted out. And look, I'm not going to deny any of those challenges, but here's what makes a book like this, a seminal book like this, so important for me, that there are some insights which don't grow old. So the very first thing being that leadership is all about context. You don't lead the same way if you're a functional leader versus if you were a P&L leader. And that to me, when I first read this book, was a big aha. Yeah, leadership can look different. So there is no one size fits all. And it's something that you invest in over a period of time, both individually into yourself, as well as organizationally. And a couple of things that really struck out for me were, when they talk about the pipeline, it's a journey, both for the individual and the organization. So there is no way to suddenly build a robust leadership pipeline if you are investing in leadership development at an individual versus a group scale, or for 1 year or for 3 years. There is no magic wand and there is no magic formula. It has to be done over a period of time, and you have to invest at every different level of leadership, and you have to invest both at the individual level and at the team level and the organizational level. And it all takes effort and intention, but it pays off like nothing else. I love that book, but again, we don't live in times of all of us being book readers. So I do want to give a shout out to a podcast. One of my go-to resources for leadership development is a podcast called Play to Potential. The host, Deepak Jayaraman, is fantastic, and he actually interviews people from all walks of life. Literally, the diversity of professions is just amazing. Globally, it is a very diverse group of people. And the central idea is, what do they think of potential and playing to potential, both personal and leadership? And through his insightful questions and by having such a diverse set of leaders who he interviews, he really brings out many, many lessons in both personal growth and professional growth. So if anyone is looking for a really insightful podcast, I would absolutely recommend Play to Potential.
Thank you for that. So since I've already read Leadership Pipeline cover to cover, it was for a program I was on a team to build based on Leadership Pipeline, I definitely will add that to my podcast list. I listen to a podcast at least once a day. It's a great, like you said, it's a great way to stay up to date, get new information, expand your ideas, just to listen to new podcasts every day. So I'll try that one out as well.
Great.
So you have been a fabulous guest. I am so happy we invited you onto the show. I've gained a lot of insights, and I hope our listeners have too. But that does it for this week's episode of Learning Leader Spotlight. I hope everyone enjoyed it as much as I did, and I hope you tune in next week for our next episode. And thank you again, Ramath. I wanted to give you a parting gift. We're going to plant 5 trees in your name as a thank you to you.
Thank you. That is so sweet. That's so thoughtful. That's amazing.
I'm glad you like it. It's our charity here at Training Pros. So we're going to be planting 5 trees in the Monarch Restoration Project to plant trees that monarchs can nest in along their pathway. And I'll send you a certificate about that.
Thank you. So here's to some more beautiful butterflies in the world. And thank you, Leanne. This was great. Your questions, as tough as they were, really did made me think a lot. So I appreciate it.
Okay. Well, thank you so much. And join us next week on the next Learning Leader Spotlight.
Thanks for joining us for the latest episode of Learning Leader Spotlight, interviews with corporate L&D leaders. You'll find links in the show notes to any resources mentioned on today's show. If you're enjoying our podcast, please subscribe so you never miss an episode, and leave us a 5-star review.